Welcome back to Señora Vibes. I'm your host, the Alicia E. Señora Vibes is a spicy lifestyle show celebrating the dynamic experiences of women 40 plus. According to ChatGPT, Señora Vibes typically refers to an aura or demeanor that gives off an elegant, sophisticated, and mature vibe, often associated with older women or señoras. It's about carrying oneself with confidence and grace, exuding a sense of wisdom and experience. So if this sounds like you, come embrace your señora vibes with me, and let's explore together our señora era fearlessly and excited. Friends, welcome back to Señora Vibes, where we celebrate and encourage women 40 plus to be all that they can be. In these last few episodes of season 12, I am bringing to you an author that I listened to very recently from her audiobook, someone that just resonated so much with me and in her book. And so I wanted to present her to you all. Her name is Kate Cohen, and she is a Washington Post contributing columnist, and also she's the author of We of Little Faith, Why I Stop Pretending to Believe, and Maybe You Should Too. She is a fabulous author, and we talk about how to be good without God. We also talked a little bit about how we can create a community for ourselves, since the concept of church community doesn't exist for many of us, and also how you can encourage each other and other believing moms to just be themselves around believers, especially when they think of us as heretics. So it's an interesting topic, something very unique and different for me, and I definitely want you to just, you know, come into this episode with an open mind. Thank you so much. Love you all. I hope you enjoy. Let me know. Welcome to the podcast, Señora Vibes, Kate Cohen. I'm so grateful to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
So I found you because I follow a few pages on Instagram. I follow a few pages on Twitter. And I was using the hashtag atheist. And you popped up literally right away because I was also looking for a book that I could read. And immediately yours came up. And I'm like, ooh, I need to read this. This sounds interesting. So I think the reason why the book just made such an impact on me because the title, it said, We of Little Faith, Why I Stop Pretending to Believe. And I think that is such a good hook because I think so many of us pretend to believe so that we don't have to ask to answer the question of why we don't, right? I think my fear on why I don't say anything or why I stay in the closet in some sense is because I don't want to hurt anybody's sense of self, right? Or give them the idea that I don't appreciate them as who they are for themselves. Mm-hmm. Or maybe also I don't want to feel like they're gonna immediately judge me or kick me out of the friend group, you know, because, this girl has no morals. This girl has no ethics, which is an assumption that's made for people like us, you know?
Yes.
So tell me, where did this title come from? And why is it so important that those of us like myself start talking more about it, which is what I'm actually doing now. And thanks to your book, I'm coming out.
Great.
Of my shell and just doing it a lot more. My closest friends know that about me. You know, that my parents, all the people that are very close to me, but I don't express it. So give me some background on that title and then why you think we should be more open about it.
Well, I can talk to you about the title.
Yes.
In the sense of the process of actually coming up with a title with your publisher and your agent and things like that. Or I could talk about it more in a sense of, you know, how it really expresses what I went through, you know, in my life. I mean, to that point, I was raised Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And I, even though it was a Reform Jewish, so kind of the most, not the most progressive, but the sort of least traditional in my area. You can get even more progressive in big cities, but I was raised in a small town in Virginia, which is mostly Christian. And the synagogue was one of those places that had to be kind of all things to all Jews, because mm-hmm. There just weren't any options. Mm-hmm. And my parents were pretty, I wouldn't say reverent. They weren't reverent, but we did all the things. We did the Friday night Sabbath candle lighting, and we did Sunday school. We did the traditions. My sisters and I were all bat mitzvah. You know, so there was a lot of praying that came out of my mouth. There were a lot of, songs. There was a lot of praise of God, which is what mm-hmm. the Jewish liturgy really is, to a great extent, a lot of praise of God. And I would just say that I never, that I can remember, ever mm-hmm. believed that God was listening to those prayers. I didn't really ever think of him as an actual being. I thought of him as a literary character. Or a concept,
right,
a tradition. And so, but I kept that to myself. And so the pretending in the title is partly just going through the motions of being religious and just, letting people believe that meant that I believed the things I was saying.
Yes.
And some of it is actual, there were some actual deception and lying, I would say, in my journey. And then there was a lot of what you describe, which is, just not bringing it up when I could have brought it up, not being forthcoming mm-hmm. because exactly what you say. I didn't want either to be judged by other people or to have them think that I was judging them, honestly, and so I spent basically my entire young adulthood until I had kids pretending in one way or another to believe. And it's not that hard to pretend.
No, it's not.
In this mm-hmm. country, because everyone assumes you do.
That's the assumption, right? So we do get away with that. It's like you said,
that's right.
It's not something that it's visible just or perceived just by looking at you.
Right.
You mentioned that about age and your race. And you're right, because you can't hide it. You can't say, oh yeah, of course. Or, when somebody says, well, let's have a prayer at the table. And so you just put your head down and you just start thinking, about other things, or you just like the thing that I tell my boys is like, take an opportunity to just be thankful for what you have, because my boys, and I'm raising two teenagers without any religion or without any belief system. And I say to them, well, whenever your friends or whenever you go somewhere, you have a game, then just put your head down and say all the things that you're grateful for, because that really is, what you really should focusing on is what are you grateful for and what sorts of things could you do better for yourself. So it's like a self-reflection is what I tell them. It's like, reflect on yourself and reflect on your life. But you're right, I think we hide it because it's easy to hide.
It's easy to hide. It's because you can't see it from the outside. Mm-hmm. If there is this general assumption, then it doesn't take much to get people to believe that you are part of the norm, of the vast majority of people. So I was fine with that. Honestly, I'm a very get along kind of a person until all the way through college, all the way, after college. I got married to my college sweetheart, who was also mm-hmm. Jewish, and we had a Jewish wedding. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot of God in the wedding, but there was, we turned down the God
parts. Were you already having doubts back then when you met him? And was it something you talked to him as you were courting?
Well, like I say, I never believed. So having doubts, I guess the only question is that the questions that we had together as a couple were were more about how much do we, you know, piss off his parents who were much more religious than my parents.
Okay.
By not going to synagogue or by, you know, by making it clear what we believed and how much we don't. And I, you know, we were young and I in particular was very conflict averse and loved to be the beloved daughter-in-law. So we had a Jewish wedding to please all of our parents, but particularly mm-hmm. his parents.
Okay.
And so, yes, my husband and I were on the same page, and I get email from, people asking me for advice, you know, mm-hmm. when they are not a believer, but their spouse mm-hmm. is,
mm-hmm.
And I just think, oh my goodness, I had it so lucky.
Yeah. You know, so did I.
Yeah. So we were copacetic, but we were, you know, outside of our tiny little group of closest friends. We were not clear about being atheists. I mean, it took me a while to understand that's what I was, you know,
right.
that, and then we had kids in the book, as you know, and in my life, that was really the turning point for me because, you know, it's a real point where you decide what are you passing on? You know, what's going through you onto the next generation? That's one of the things. And the other thing for me was that I felt this intense responsibility to mm-hmm. my children, who, when they're born, uh-huh. they are almost upsettingly dependent on you for their understanding of the world. You know, they understand the world the way that you tell them to for quite a long time.
No, and, for sure.
It's an awesome responsibility, and I absolutely felt almost physically averse to misleading them in mm-hmm. any way or telling them something I didn't believe to be true. And so by then I was very clear that I didn't believe, I mean, I was always clear, but it forced me to clarify to myself and to them and to articulate to them that I believe that God was a human invention and that religions were invented for good reason,
mm-hmm.
to help explain the world to people and to help people get through their lives. And that, you know, for me, how I described it to them, how I guess first broached the subject was with Greek myths, you know, where I basically said, this is one way that people have tried to explain their world to themselves. Mm-hmm. And it's just like the stories of Moses and God that we read about, you know, at Passover at your grandparents' house. And it's just like the stories of Jesus, and Christmas. And, you know, it's just all those things are the same kind of thing.
Well, I think the part where we're like my husband and I explain it to our kids is like the part of Jesus is the divinity component for him, as opposed to the person and the prophet or the person who walked this earth and taught lessons. And I think, you know, we try to make it like the difference. And for them, it's like with there's the people, the Christians who believe there's a divine being, you know, who can do all of these miracles and can create all of these different things. As the son of God, and then as the person who walked the earth to teach us some lessons. And so when I met my husband, he was raised with nothing, completely nothing. And I was raised a Catholic. His mm-hmm. family was, his mother was actually Catholic from Eastern Europe. And so we, as you did, we got married in the Catholic Church to please our families, right? My parents and his mother and his grandparents. But when we were having kids, I mean, that was one conversation we definitely had, and we were like, okay, so we're gonna be, you know, together on this conversation that we're not gonna teach them with church or with any particular belief in God. But one thing that I wanted to ask you, which is something you mentioned in your book, and you say to us in your book, you always say, why do some moms give their children the choice? Because that's where I was standing from. You said, why do some of these moms who don't believe and who are atheist or agnostic, why are they still giving their children that choice to believe in something as they grow up, right? Because that's kind of how I saw it for a long time until I read your book. And I thought about it. I said, well, you know, I was giving my kids an option. And I did say, you know, if you ever decide that the Christian church is something that appeals to you and gives you some comfort, I mean, I'm not going to be that mom that's going to say, no, don't do it. Don't go for it. Even though I don't do it and I don't want to do it. But at the same time, I'm not comfortable with that either. Like, I really wish they wouldn't gravitate to that, and they don't, but you know, they're 21 and 16. So I don't know what, a real Catholic girl, and that girl's going to convince them, or they're going to meet a girl who's a Mormon and she's going to say, come to my church. Right. So why are you in that perspective? Why is that the field? Cause I have a lot of moms who listen to my podcast, a lot of women who are in their 50s, which is our age. So tell me about that.
Absolutely. Well, there's a couple of things. One is, I mean, eventually they will make up their own minds. There's nothing I can do about that. It's not like that's not like how I raise them, you know, when they're little is going to prevent them from, you know, their lives taking a different direction, or their ideas taking different directions. So it wasn't like, it's not like you get to permanently set the controls. And I don't think, and I think I was always pretty clear. I mean, we continued to do some like Jewish holiday things with my in-laws. And I was always clear that they were welcome. We were welcome. I feel like everybody is welcome to continue to use these things, whether they believe or not. The thing that I didn't do was to say, well, God may or may not be real, you know, or we don't believe in God, other people do, you know, you get to decide. On that point, on the point of like saying whether or not an imaginary creature could exist, I didn't feel like I needed to do that. I felt like it was fine for me to say, no, this is something that people have created, that people have made up. Just like the amazing characters in the books that you read. And it's fascinating that they do this. And we can talk about why people do this. But I didn't feel any more than I felt like with the possibility that there were actually fairies, or that there were actually monsters under their bed, or anything like that, that I had some responsibility to leave the question open. I didn't think that. And that is different.
It's more of a comfort zone for us to keep the question open, right? I felt, for me, it was a comfort zone. I felt like, okay, I'm giving myself that little comfort where I'm not imposing, or I'm not giving my kids what they should think or what they should feel.
You know, that's a really interesting point. It feels like, because it also, it's comfortable maybe for you not to be as definite, you know, about it. For me, I felt like, I don't know, in America, at least, the whole world is saying that this thing is true. And I just, I guess maybe I was just tired of it. They're going to get the other perspective. It's out there. It's everywhere. And so in a way, for me, I felt like it was important to be very clear and not imply in any way that I thought that the question was open. I mean, I suppose the question is open, and I don't think it's open. There's also a part about not thinking that, not being an agnostic, which is another...
But I think part of why we feel that comfort is because we were raised with a certain conditioning, a certain way of looking at the world, and seeing, for example, morality as, you know, if you believe in God, then you know right from wrong, you know good from bad. Yeah. And I think that's another part of your book where I also felt, you know, really connected was where, you know, why do we keep assigning morality to a book or assigning a sense of ethics to a set of books? Why do we not have that intrinsically already in ourselves without having to look outside of at higher power for that, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we do have it in ourselves. I mean, that, so just so that your listeners know, the first part of the book is my story about, and it's a very common story, I think. I realize now, the more and more I talk to people, the more I realize how common it is, of growing up in a religious context, not believing or coming to non-belief, and keeping that to myself, and then eventually learning, making myself almost to be honest with other people about it. So that, and that's sort of like, and then what happens there? And that's the first part of the book. It's more of a memoir. The second part of the book takes all of the things that people think that they get from religion, or that they do get from religion, I mean, at one by one, and tries to understand what it is, understand if it really comes from religion, and then understand if how and if atheists can also have it, you know. So there are chapters about death and how to think about death without an afterlife. There's chapters about holidays and prayer and rites of passage, and morality. And that's what you're talking about. And the chapter on morality was so much, I mean, they were all fun. I have a good time. I think that's another thing that your listeners should know.
It's a great book, and it's very
it's very fun.
It's very relatable. Like I could see myself having those same discussions with my boys as well.
Right. I use all kinds of things. I use Tolstoy, I use Shakespeare, I use, you know, a story about the NBA. I use all kinds of things. So I'm having a good time. But that chapter I really enjoy, because the first part of it, in discussing morality and religion, is basically proving that morality does not come from religion. It's really, really the other way around. So people bring that intrinsic sense of right and wrong that you were just talking about. People bring that to their faith traditions.
We do.
And so I really enjoyed making that argument, and it's not a difficult argument to make. All you have to do is look at the different ways in which people use, for example, the Bible and quotes from the Bible, and how do they decide? How do they pick to whether to emphasize this one rule of many, 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 many rules, or this other rule, or this story, or this other story, or this idea of Jesus as someone who gives and who devotes himself to the poor and the needy, versus an idea of, you know, Jesus as someone who cares about, you know, whether or not
people
sleep with the wrong people, I don't know.
Friends, before we go, I'm asking a huge favor of you. Please review the podcast. You can go to Apple or you can go to Spotify. Share the episodes with your friends and support my sponsors. Furthermore, I'd love to connect with you when you visit my website, www.aliciaelatassi.com. Here you'll see that I can help you set up your very own podcast. You'll have access to my curated travel itineraries. Additionally, my caregiver's handbook, something I'm very proud of. There's even something there on creating passive income. Oh, and let's not forget, I can help you buy or sell your home. So check me out at www.aliciaelatassi.com. And remember, the key to anything is execution.